Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Network. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Hello, everyone. This is the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. I'm very excited to have as my guest today a dear friend and esteemed colleague, tenor Carlos Figueiredo. I'm your host, Jan Jaffe. Welcome to Your Best Life. I'll just take a moment to introduce myself. I'm a graduate of Northwestern University, from which I hold both my bachelor's and master's degrees. I'm also an IPEC certified professional coach, Energy Leadership Index master practitioner, and a core well-being dynamic specialist. I had a successful international career as a concert and opera singer and voice and masterclass teacher, which was cut short by traumatic brain injuries. These TBIs, as they're called, altered my life. I lost language for 6 weeks and was thrilled after 4 months when I was finally able to walk with the aid of a walker. My recovery took many, many years and was extremely difficult. But as a result, I've come to discover many things about myself and life, namely what it is to lose oneself, definition, career, and purpose in life and feel totally lost, that there is great strength in vulnerability, that there can be great opportunity and challenge, strengths I had never known I had, the true meaning of resiliency, and that I'm very good at picking myself up, dusting myself off, and hurling myself forward. I don't mean to make it sound as though it was an easy or straightforward process. It most certainly was not. With Forward to Success, I'm dedicated to helping professional women and opera singers achieve optimal success, realization of their potential, and passion, purpose, life balance, and well-being in every aspect of their lives. You can contact me at info@forwardtosuccess.com. Carlos Figueiredo and I were students together at Northwestern University's School of Music. We studied in the same voice studio with the one and only Norman Gulbranson and worked together professionally in Chicago while we were still both students at NU. Carlos, an extraordinarily talented and gifted tenor, was the first of us to go to Germany with a contract to sing in a major opera house. His career came to an abrupt halt when he was faced with a sudden life-threatening health crisis. His journey back to health, his courage, vulnerability, strength, and resiliency after surviving brain cancer, surgery, and resulting traumatic brain injury is truly inspiring. I am very excited to have Carlos Figueiredo as my guest on today's show. Welcome, Carlos.
Thank you, Jan, for having me, and I'm very happy to talk to you again.
Oh, thank you. The number here is 646-716-9397. I would like to invite our listeners to call in. We welcome your calls, questions, comments, and contribution to the discussion. The number again is 646-716-9397. Carlos, I wonder if you wouldn't mind telling us a bit about your history, your beginnings in Cuba, coming to the United States, Northwestern University, and your career both in Chicago and Europe.
No problem. I came to this country in 1968. As many people know, at the time, there was a complete blockade of what was, and it still is, a communist country. The communism, of course, was stronger there. And I was 14 years old. The reason why I bring this up about communism is because one of the rules at the time that Cuba had was that any male between the ages of 15 and 28 had to serve the country in the military, and which is not really that big of a problem. Many countries have that. The big problem was that upon becoming 15 years old, and even if you went to serve the government or the country for the amount of time that you had to, one could not leave the country until after age 28. My parents, let's put it this way, were not too tremendously happy with communism, and so there was incredible need for me to leave. One of my uncles had left the island and was in Evanston, Illinois, where I now live, and through him, I was able to received the money to come to this country. It was a very expensive kind of situation. He had a family of his own, and as you can imagine, having had just arrived himself, he didn't really have that much money, but it was incredibly important that I'd leave. So again, I bring this up because of the fact that there was not enough money for the entire family, so I had to leave all by myself. I left Cuba at age 14, and I went to, at the time, there was no direct flights between Cuba and this country, so I went to Spain, where I lived for 3 months, waiting for my papers to come as a legal alien into this country. That experience was interesting. As you can imagine, a 14-year-old all by himself in Europe was exciting in many ways, scary in others. I came to this country, to Evanston, where my uncle was, and I went into Evanston Township High School as a sophomore. I was really happy that I was able to learn English rather quickly. I am not too terrible at languages. I love languages. So within 6 months, I was able to carry enough of a conversation that they moved me from special classes into just your regular, everyday high school kid. I went there, and it just so happened that I had to take some classes in music, and I loved what I was taking, and I started taking voice lessons. And the director of the high school, not the director of the high school, but the director of the music department of the high school, had a meeting with me and my voice teacher, and encouraged me to follow this path a little more seriously than what I expected it to be. And so I did. When it came time to start looking for colleges and things like that, I thought, well, I live in a town where there's a great school, not knowing how great this school was, and I thought, well, I applied there, and I applied in other different schools for, of all things, psychology, another thing that I love. I was accepted in several of them, but not having much money, Northwestern University, where I applied as a both as singer and in psychology, gave me money, but to come to the music school, and that's how the music career started, all by chance. That's
wow.
That's where I met you, Jan, and met a lot of other people that have become and very special in my life. Then after that, well, you know, I don't know if how much longer you want me to keep talking.
Well, I mean, that's quite a story, Carlos. I mean, there are details in there that even I didn't know about you. So that's really, you're such an amazing person. And every little extra detail I hear just increases my appreciation for the person that you are. So, and as we know, you did your undergrad work and got your degree at Northwestern University, and was with this amazing, amazing tenor instrument that you have and everything that you had behind it, the intellect, the incredible musicality, which got you. We did a lot of work together while we were both in that area, and you know, in the Chicago area. And you then went on to Europe. You were the first of us that I was aware of who went to Europe to have your career, that got offered an opera contract in Germany.
Yeah, actually, the way it happened, Norma Goranson, some people listening may know who he was, and the man was an incredible singer, teacher of singers, and many of his singers became very good singers, if not totally famous. I mean, becoming famous as a singer is something else that we're not even going to touch here, because that is just takes so much luck, so much being in you know, and all that stuff. But anyway, it was Norman Goranson who said to me one day, "Well, when are you going to go to Europe?" And right. And I thought, well, maybe it's time. So I looked for, I didn't really just want to go to Europe to look for a job. I thought, well, maybe I want to go there and test the waters. And I entered an international competition in Barcelona, which was a God-given, because I was the youngest in that competition. I hate to sound to blow my own horn, but I was the youngest, and I went all the way through the. I did not win the competition, and but I went all the way through the. Let's see, it was semifinals, or semifinals at different levels, and so I went as high as possible in that semifinals, and I was competing with people who were, you know, some of them were even as old as 20 years my senior. Of course, these international competitions again have their own, you know, politics, and talking about politics, guess who won? It was one of the Russians, and very, very, very talented individual. But there was a lot of other things that were going on there at the time. There was lots of desires in that area towards the Russian kind of situation. Anyway, I divert. That's how, in one of those levels of the competition, that's how some people heard me and said, you know, you should come over to Germany and sing here and there. And I auditioned for several agencies. One of those agencies took me, and I was sent to different areas, and that's how the job came about.
Wonderful story. I love what you say about politics. There's politics in everything, isn't there? Even in the dog show world, which I'm involved in, or used to be involved in as well. There is. There's politics in everything. But, oh, my goodness. And like you said, you were the youngest. So, and it was great exposure, and that's often how, you know, is so much in this business is not just who you know, but who becomes aware of you. Because you can have the greatest voice in the world, but if no one's aware of you, you're not going to get anywhere. So it's not like there are ads in the newspaper looking for an opera singer opening in this opera house. Especially in this country, there's very little work. So I'd like you to, if you wouldn't mind, telling us how you came to discover that you had an astrocytoma, a particularly aggressive cancerous brain tumor.
Well, that too is an interesting and long story, which I'm going to try to make as simple as possible. As we all know, brain tumors are, you know, like the symptoms of brain tumors are headaches and vomiting and things like that. I had all of those symptoms, but Jan, they never ever came together until the very last week before I went into the hospital.
Would you mind telling us about that morning? I think you were in dress rehearsal. Am I correct?
The morning of I had just finished the night before singing one of my favorite operas, which is The Magic Flute, and we were on dress rehearsal for the Tannhäuser, the opera Tannhäuser. I was not Tannhäuser. I don't have that kind of a voice, but I was one of the minor roles in it. And it was a rake stage, and
can you explain to our audience who doesn't know what a rake stage is? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, a rake stage is a stage that it's slanted towards the top, and I literally couldn't go up the stage. Primarily because the tumor that I had was in the cerebellum. The cerebellum, as many people know, is in the back of the brain at the bottom of, like, the top of the neck, the bottom of the head. That cerebellum is part of the nervous system along with the actual hemisphere of the brain and the spinal cord stem. The cerebellum is responsible for all of control of all of your motions, your limbs, your eyes, your being able to swallow, your being able to stand up erect and walk and things like that. So obviously, that was one of the major things that rake stage showed me. That I just simply no longer could do that. I had no strength. In one of the scenes of that dress rehearsal, we were supposed to carry a quote unquote dead singer. Well, she wasn't dead, of course, but I had no strength. I could not lift my side. And
so was this acute? Was this like, was all of a sudden?
This part is where I started getting a tremendous headache. I thought I was going to, lose it right there on the stage, my lunge. I couldn't see things. All of these things came together at the exact same time.
During the rehearsal. Okay.
During that rehearsal. And so I was thankful. Believe it or not, I was a very strong person. I mean, physically strong.
I remember you were, yes.
I was always heavy, but I was strong. So after the rehearsal, I didn't tell anybody because, you know, most people don't want to hear these things. And so I left the Opera House, and it so happens that the town where I lived was where I was doing this opera. I lived right across from the Opera House, so I went to my home and rested a little bit, and then from there I went to the hospital, and I walked to it as well. And the reason why I bring this up is because the town itself, although it was about 500,000 people, it was physically not very large. There were all of these things were like downtown, the downtown area, so I could actually walk to the hospital. Well, when I got there from my house, which is only about five blocks to the hospital, they took a look at me, and the way that I looked, I must have looked kind of interesting, because they kind of let me in real quickly. And I'll never forget, it was very funny, because the gentleman said to me, was looking in my eyes, and he said, "Well, you know, I do see something there, but I'm not quite." In Germany, they tried to minimize a lot of these things. And, of course, they didn't want to scare me in any way. But then he said, they took an X-ray, and they said, yes, there is definitely a tumor there, and we're going to have to admit you into the hospital. At that point, I said, well, you know what? They knew who I was, because that's another thing that is great about these places. You know, they treat their opera singers like gods. and so I said, well, you know, I have another rehearsal tonight, a major rehearsal, and I've got to let them know that I'm not going to be there. So they said, seeing how I walked and everything like that, they said, well, we'll give you 10 minutes to go to the Opera House, because they knew it was only a few blocks away. If you're not back, we're coming to get you. It was like a dream kind of thing. It was like, no, this is not happening. What is it? And they put me into an ambulance and took me to another hospital, which was, I did not even know that existed, in a town called Bochum, where there's a great neurological center there. That's where I had the operation. But the whole thing was just happening like with lightning speed. I couldn't even tell you what came first.
Wasn't it true, though, that they couldn't do that? They wanted to do the surgery right away, but they were so concerned about your survival rate that they waited, I think it was 2 days until a family member could be there, because they didn't know that you would survive, or they had great doubts that you would survive.
That was absolutely it. This astrocytoma, I guess the actual name of this thing, and I looked up some of these things, so I'm not making these things up, and I'm not a doctor, so I'm going to try to explain this as easily as I possibly can. It's called an anaplastic astrocytoma. Astrocytoma is it's called astro. Obviously, we know the word astro. It looks like a star. And the reason why they did not think I was going to survive this is because this kind of tumor, they're labeled in 1, 2, 3, and 4, and these astrocytomas are a 3 type of cancer tumor, which they did not even mention to me the word cancer either. I found these things out later by my own research. And these astrocytomas are very slow-growing tumors. They do not know the cause for these things. All they know is that they're also part of the traumatic brain injuries. Traumatic brain injuries usually we think of as something from the outside, such as a fall or an accident or some kind of blow to the brain. But these tumors are also considered brain injuries because they grow in the brain and they invade the space, which of course is in the cranium there is no place, so it squeezes everything and starts killing nerves, cells within the brain and things like that. And so this astrocytoma is a low grade, very slow growing, so they think that I probably had it for many, many years. And it is something that is very unusual, and they did not expect me to survive this. So they asked me with whom I lived, where I lived by myself, and they said, I think you probably want to have a family member with you. And so you're right. They waited until my mother came over from this country, and at that time, from that time on, I can't quite tell you. I think giving me something, or I don't remember the exact chronology. I know that she came, and then after that, like within hours, I had the operation. Like I said, the whole thing was just happening. Like, it was like, I can't believe these things. At that point, I did not even know what was happening anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's horrifyingly scary, I'm sure. That must have been, traumatic, not just traumatic injury, but, you know, it's a traumatic time. Although, it sounds like when you're in that, you're not necessarily as traumatized because you're just, I think you're, what happens is our survival technique in a sense kicks in. We have no choice but to be in the situation. And so your mother was there, and I'm sure that was very frightening for her. But her main job and her main desire, I'm sure at the time, was to be supportive to you. So what I'm wondering was, about your recovery. What was recovery like after the surgery?
It was slow. It is still slow because I'm still in a way recovering. Since they can only get a certain part of these brain tumors, and at the time when it happened, this was back in 1980, they actually had to open the cranium and take out the gelatin-like, tumor. But these astrocytomas, which is, I understand, it's the part that is very difficult, they have tentacles that go into the brain, and those tentacles needed to be killed. So part of my recovery was, as well, killing those things with radiation and chemotherapy. And radiation, which is where I'm going into the recovery, radiation has side effects of making you very tired, and also memory kind of goes away of all of these things. That added to my recovery time. Every time I had one of these radiation things, it would just send me into it would just make me not the same as a human being needs to be. Mm-hmm. It took me forever. I lost all ability to. The tumor had pressed so hard on the cerebellum that I lost ability to walk. I am still recovering because my balance is completely shot, and because it killed so many cells. And those cells, too, one thing that is wonderful about the way that God made this brain is that it does cell stems go from one to another, and other cells relearn what those that you lost knew.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why
mm-hmm.
it's been taking such a long time. I kid with my friends because I say I'm the easiest person to kill. First of all you have to do is give me a little push, and there I go. Don't tell anybody that, right? No one is going to do that. But, and I have to laugh at those things because we are so happy when our child takes his or her first step. It is such an incredible, wonderful thing that human beings do. And you don't really realize what it is until you lose it. Not being able to, looking at something and not being able to go get it. Or I still cannot go downstairs, steps without holding onto something because I'd lose my balance. Part of the radiation has taken my memory completely away. I think that you kind of understand that one. Mm-hmm. And there are big holes in my memory, and I know several languages. Sometimes I can remember the word, but not in the one that I'm talking at the moment. And so it's kind of, it's a very unusual and difficult thing to explain. But it's taken, 35, 40 years for me to get where I am right now. But every little step that I take and every little, there are so many little things that happen in a body that has lost so many things that when you conquer one little thing, it's like, oh, great. And I don't see well. I see through kind of like, well, right after the operation, I have 20/200, which is legally blind. Right now, I have 20/70, which a lot of people do, but this is something that a lot of people are able to correct pretty well with glasses. My glasses correct only my double vision. I don't distinguish things too well. I see through a cloud, and that's part of those cells that were lost in the optic nerve. The optic nerve goes through the head, through the brain, from the eyes all the way to the back, which I think is why sometimes they can look in your eyes. Like I said, I'm not a doctor. I don't know any of this stuff. But they can look in your eyes, and they can see things that are happening in there, the pressure, the way it looks. So anyway, the tumor was so big, and it had been there for such a long time that it destroyed many of the optic nerve cells and caused scar tissue. And from what I'm being told, I go to an ophthalmologist every 6 months. My eyes need to look around that in order to see anything. So it's kind of like the strangest thing. I could be looking down at a piece of paper, and right next to it there is a glass of water, and not see it because of the fact that the scar tissue doesn't allow whatever it is that the eyes do to go there. I don't see full vision. When you look at something, you see everything that is there. I don't.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really, I mean, that's quite a handicap that you've dealt with. I mean, between the balance and the vision. I just want to take a moment here because here on the Life Coach Radio Networks, we're proud to have as our sponsor Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the Internet, offering customers a new way to enhance and enrich their lives every day. Audible is the preeminent provider of spoken word audio products, which include more than 100,000 audio programs from more than 1,800 content providers. You can listen on all of their products on whatever you're listening to the show on now, your tablet, your phone, your smartphone, or your computer. Receive a free audiobook with your 30-day trial when you sign up with Audible today at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. Now, here are some books on brain trauma and surgery to tie in with our show today. The first one is The Brain That Changes Itself, Personal Triumphs from the Frontiers of Brain Science, written by Norman Doidge. The second is Do No Harm, Stories of Life, Death, and Brain Surgery, written by Henry Marsh. Next we have Me Now, Who Next, written by Angela Leigh Tucker and Bill Ramsey. And Smiling Again, Coming Back to Life and Faith After Brain Surgery, written by Sally Stapp. So don't forget to sign up for a one-month free trial to get your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. Audible.com, making listening a tool for life. And now back to our show. Carlos, first of all, I want to thank you so much for being so open and vulnerable and telling us about what you've gone through. I'm also aware that you have some other physical as well as cognitive deficits as a result of the surgery and the TBI that you endured. So if you wouldn't mind talking more about some of those other things.
Well, as I mentioned, and I think that actually we have talked about this, is part of the handicap. I walk with a cane, and we talked about the fact that there are blind, is that the word that you used? I don't remember. Handicaps, because by looking at me, you would...
Invisible. They call this the invisible disability. Right, okay.
There you go, that's what I'm talking about.
Like the blind leading the blind here.
Yeah. It's funny. I know. It's funny. But part of the things that I have is, you know, like I said, the cerebellum controls all the parts of your body. Well, sometimes my left hand decides that it's going to just go out by itself. And it does. And that's, I don't know what other handicaps you were thinking about, but, you know, I can't, a huge part of, maybe that's what you're talking about, it's taken me a long, long time to even come to coming close to sing, to making any kind of a singing sound. And part of what I lost there was also breath control and diaphragm control. And I was very lucky that they were very careful with my throat, because of course during the operations they put things in your throat and all that stuff. None of that was damaged. A handicap also that happens to a lot of people as they grow older, you start losing memory, and sometimes I get to a point where I cannot just, I mean, I've done something 4 million times, but I just simply cannot remember what the next step is. So mm-hmm. Is that what you were thinking about?
No, I just know that and when we've talked, you've talked about, you know, different little things, and such as what you're mentioning, and also what your challenges with singing now, because it's not that the instrument was damaged, but how the brain is such a master kind of programmer, and I'm not finding the right word, but the processor, basically, just like your computer, it's the processor for our body, so that things that we, you know, can normally do easily or without thinking about it, now things don't work the same way. So you've talked about
now. I think I remember what you were talking about. Yeah, we were talking about confidence in that one program. Is that in part of what pretty much went away was my confidence because of the fact that part of anything, but certainly singing, it's got to be automatic. And when you have to be so concerned that you're not going to lose your balance walking from A to B, point A to point B, or that you are at the same time trying to remember words, some of which may be in a language that is not exactly what you want, all of these things are no longer automatic in my brain. Mm-hmm. And that too is part of my recovery.
You've also talked about that your breath control, you don't have the breath control, things just don't work the same way physically.
They
used to.
Right, and to a lot of people, I mean, we're talking about these things, and I'm sure that I'm hoping that they're not too technically for singers, but one of the major things propels your voice out of your body is your ability to control that diaphragm and give it strength, and with the air to be able to make those sounds and things like that. That doesn't always happen, and mm-hmm. therefore there are things that are resulting difficulties with that, such as pitch variation, intonation, which is pitch variation, not remembering what I need to do to control that. All of those things are specific handicap from being a singer. And to tell you the truth, the biggest handicap that I've ever had which I'm still working on, is my ability to forgive myself for not being able to do something and becoming so disgusted that I go into this, I used to, not anymore, into this total abyss of depression. Mm-hmm. And that is the biggest thing about losing this. It's not even, because physically, yeah, it's taken me 40 years, and I may never again be the same that I was, but psychologically, these things do quite a big number on you, as I'm sure that in some ways you know what I'm talking about, and there may be some people who are listening or will listen that know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Confidence.
Yes,
I'm just sorry,
because that was my next question, was how did you cope mentally after losing everything that defined you up to that point? And that's huge, because I know that you went through so much dealing with the loss, and you know everything that when you are dedicated to an art form, or someone who is a dedicated athlete, it's the exact same thing as what we did, or any instrumentalist, but especially as the similarities between an athlete and an opera singer are very similar, because we are the instrument. And you can't just run out and get another instrument. We are the instrument. So, and it requires so much dedication and focus, and it's completely who we are, we define ourselves as. you know, we that is who we are and what we are, and it's our focus, it's our identity, it is, if you distill this down and took all the water out of us, you'd have a little tiny opera singer. I mean, that's a crazy analogy, but not even analogy, but an image, but that's what it is. That's who we are. That's all that we are. That's all that we know, and it demands that much of us. So all of a sudden, that is gone, and it's an amazing loss. Because at that point, we really don't know who we are without it. So I'm wondering, and you started to go into that, but I wanted to also make it clear to our listening audience just exactly what this is about. Because not everybody is connected in that way to their career.
You're absolutely right. And I have been very lucky to have found just the right people who have helped me. I was on the psychological analysis treatment for a long time, thinking, you know, and just generally having someone who is trained to guide my thoughts or guided my thoughts towards looking at things not necessarily as totally an impossible hill to climb, and also that is not something that that I caused. Learning all that was very important. Support from my family and friends. I went through a big period, which, by the way, it is something that a lot of people don't even realize that. But I for many years, I just totally hated to listen to music. My whole body went into actual physical pain listening to singers and listening to not just even singers but any kind of music. It would either send me into tremendous depression or it would be something that I thought, how could I have done this? And to tell you the truth, I am right now, well, you know that, and maybe some people who may be listening know this, we reconnected through Facebook, and your attempts were several, and it wasn't necessarily because I was ignoring you. It was because I knew that you represented part of my life that I wanted to kind of forget. And but when I finally answered and I started reconnecting with friends from Northwestern and people who, not everything is so horrible, and people understand, and yes, you lose being a singer, but you know, once a singer, always a singer. These connections again have made me think. Well, you know, you can do this, you can do that. I did several recitals, some of which I really feel that I should have been the one paying those people who came to listen to me, because it was so pathetic. But the whole thing here, I guess the whole tenor, and no pun intended here, the whole of this whole thing is you've got to try to remember and build it up, and that this is a silly thing, but you know that if you build it, they will come. Well, I think I've been trying very, very hard to build it all back into my brain. And guess what? It is coming. It may be that I'll be too old to do anything, and that's okay. But there is hope. There is great hope. And it sounds hokey and it sounds funny, but people don't understand until you lose what you are and what you had. You don't really see how important it is.
Wow, that is so true, and you've put it so clearly. I love some of the things you said about changing your thoughts. It makes a difference in how we then can go on and how our emotions are affected by our thoughts, and then our actions are affected by our emotions. So the way that you just described that is so beautiful. It's just a fabulous demonstration of how that all works. And also your description of the shame, in a sense, that you felt, and the incredible loss, and how that makes a person feel lost, but also want to hide, and realizing that, you know, just the acceptance of where we are now, as opposed to what we were and what we had, how we had defined ourselves, and realizing, and acceptance is so important in being able to move forward, because things can happen to anybody. Life just never goes straight forward on a line, and it's not uncommon. I know I experienced so much of what you're talking about, even though my situation was not at all, didn't involve the surgery and the threat of cancer that your situation involved. However, that sense of loss and shame and wanting to hide, I experienced absolutely. So I want to thank you for sharing all of that. What the audience may not know is that you did go back to school and got a business degree. You had a successful career, and you married a lovely woman, had two beautiful sons, and enjoy a full life. So if you wouldn't mind just briefly sharing the story of how you and your lovely wife, Mary, met, because we'd love to hear about your family and your career in business.
Well, let's take that one first. That whole thing started as a challenge. Because after several years, I lived with my parents after I came back from Germany recuperating. I was, and they were very good to me, but basically for many, many, many years, I couldn't, and wouldn't go out of the apartment, the house, because I was afraid of what could happen, and so because of my eyes. At one point after in those years, I thought, well, you know, this is and talking to the psychiatrists and things like that, and other friends and things like that. I started thinking, well, now I'm feeling better and I feel more comfortable. I am going to see if I can move by myself into my own apartment. So that was a challenge, and that I had to come through. I did it. And part of that involved getting a job. Well, as you can imagine, with someone who, right, I got a job in a place that was very nice, but didn't involve. It didn't involve much. I was just sitting, answering telephones and things like that. And that's where I met my wife. She was in the customer service department of it's called the General Board of Pensions of the United Methodist Church, which at the time was here downtown Evanston. And that was another reason why I went particularly there, because I didn't have to do much of anything but just take a bus and, you know, I couldn't get lost. I mean, I'd count the stops and I'd get off on that stop and that's it. And that's where I met my wife, and we started a relation. And not that my wife was a challenge of getting married, but I thought, well, I very, very much fell in love with her, and I thought, can I do this? I could. And then at one point, I decided, well, you know what, this job is just not going to do it, so music, while people think it's wonderful and all that stuff, for a business kind of situation means nothing. So I thought, well, I got to get some other education. But how do I do this? I cannot see the board if I go to a place. So I actually got a degree through an online university where I could actually stick my face 10 inches away from the screen and see what was being said and things like that. It took me a while, but I did it, and I got a better job. So that was another challenge. My life is challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge. And I don't know what else to say. The children, well, they're not children anymore. They're 23 and 20. So, but that was fun, bringing up those two kids. And I just don't know what else to say about that part of my life.
Well,
it
sounds like you have, and from what I see on Facebook too, you have a pretty full life. You have your boys who are gorgeous, and I think one of them just went off to school, to college. And you go to concerts and opera, so you've been able to reincorporate music back into your life. You sent me that video of you singing, and I hear that same glorious instrument. So and what I find so uplifting and inspiring is throughout all of this, you still embrace each challenge. And as you said earlier, every time you attempt something and you achieve it, there's this amazing feeling of joy and success. And you've just described so many things that, you know, that are part of life. For example, is pushing ourselves and what we can get when we do push ourselves in a challenge. And also how you said before, sometimes we don't even know what it is that's so important to us and so defines us until we lose it. So I just find this, your story, so amazing and so incredibly inspiring. And I'm just as always blown away every time I speak with you. So I'm just noticing the time is just about gone. So this has been such a wonderful and informative show today. And I want to thank my guest, Carlos Figueiredo, so, so very much for being
thank
on
you.
The show today. Thank you, and sharing your story. Now, I'd also like to remind our listeners that transformation can come through many channels. Our lives can change at any moment. And while we always look ahead, all that we truly have is the present. So by living our lives with conscious intention, we can create a future we desire. Even if we find that we have suddenly lost all that we have known or that has defined us up to that point, we never know what gifts are right around the corner, even during our most challenging moments in life. By living with full awareness, authenticity, acceptance, vulnerability, and intention, We can experience growth and transformation through the opportunities presented, in life's sometimes unexpected challenges. In last night's presidential Democratic debate, Hillary Clinton mentioned some wonderful advice her mother gave her. That was this: the issue is not how many times you get knocked down. The issue is how many times you get back up. I'm Jan Jaffe of Forward to Success, and it has been my privilege to have been your host today. I would like to offer our listeners a free 30-minute discovery session, and for more information, you can always email me at info@forwardtosuccess.com. That's info at forwardtosuccess.com. You can also find me on Facebook. And I also want to remind our listeners that you're invited to share any comments or feedback on our website, and that is http://www.lifecoachradionetworks.com. In addition to my solo interview show, that's this one, Your Best Life, which airs on the second Wednesday of every month at 12 noon Eastern on this network, I also host Think Tank, a roundtable discussion. It's a panel with my brilliant co-hosts, Charissa Sebastian and Susan Gonzalez. Think Tank airs the fourth Wednesday of every month at 12 noon. In fact, our next episode deals with the topic of transition, which links well onto today's discussion. I would be delighted if you would join us for the next episode of Think Tank on October 28th, at 12 noon Eastern. Carlos, I don't know if you have any closing thoughts or comments or even contact information with our listening audience.
The only comment that I have is that, like you just said, we just have to keep going. It's not necessarily what has happened or what will happen, but what is happening right now. And what that's the only control you have.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
And I thank you very much. I thank you very much, Jan.
Oh, thank you, Carlos. My goodness, what you just said is so brilliant, and it's what we as coaches are always telling people. All we have is now. You know, we can prepare for the future, which is what we do, but all that we really have is now. So thank you so much, Carlos, and thank you for being on the show today. My goodness, it was such a treat and such a gift. Now, I'm just going to take a moment to announce a few of our upcoming shows. On this, the Life Coach Radio Network, on October 18th, that's Sunday night at 8 p.m., Mark My Words with Certified Life and Business Coach Mark Shaw. And on October 28th at 12 noon Eastern, Think Tank, Letting Go and Moving Forward. And on our sister network, the Life Coach Chat Channel, on October 19th at 2 p.m., Holy Shift with professional coaches Barb Heenan and Leslie Picchietti, and on October 20th at 7 p.m., Transform Your Life with Coach Tamara, Conversations with My Younger Self, Part 4. And on our other sister network, International Life Coach Radio, on October 16th at 2 p.m., Influential Connections with Amina, Interview with John Hart. I want to again thank my wonderful, wonderful co-host, Carlos Figueredo, for joining me today and making this show a special one. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you.